everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever, whenever you're listening. Hi, everybody. I'm Nicole Whitney. This is News for the Soul, News for Your Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained, and definitely have that covered again. We've got one of my favorite guests back here, and we're going to dive in deeper to where we went before. The author of The Theory of Everything, of a.k.a. My Big Toe Trilogy, is Tom Campbell, physicist Tom Campbell, and author. He's here. And he's with me for the full hour. We're going to dive deeper in that thing that you think is reality that you're sitting in right now. And we're going to talk about how you can start kind of testing that so-called world of yours. So let's welcome him back on and start the fun. Tom Campbell, welcome back to News for the Soul.
It's great to be here, Nicole.
And we're back. Not that I actually knew where we went to, or at least where I went to. A little technical difficulty there, but we are here with you. As I was saying, Tom Campbell's here with me. That's Nicole, News for the Soul. And we're going to start the fun right now, I hope. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Nicole. It's always good to be on this show.
That was really strange. I just kind of blipped out into a different dimension there for a minute. So how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. It's been a very lovely day here.
Excellent. Lovely. So I understand you've been pretty busy. And are you working on new books and that kind of stuff, new projects? Or
I am in my spare time, but, you know, for the last month or two, I haven't had any spare time between consulting contracts that have kind of doubled up on me and then the tsunami that hit me after the interview that we just did that has been keeping me away from writing books or almost anything else, actually. It's been very busy.
Well, that's always a good thing in the long run, I hope. Now, last time we had talked about, you know, having direct experiences with extending beyond what we think is reality, and perhaps around there somewhere is where we should pick it up at this point. Because I know that at the end of the show I had talked about getting connecting with you, comparing notes on some ideas of what we could do for direct experience, like to create something, either an experiment for the audience to do live, or just start doing some exercises, getting them to do it, and then connecting about feedback. So I want to talk about that primarily today, but before we dive into that, I want to tell you about what's been going on here. Well, there's always odd things, like me going interdimensional in a moment on the air like that, going on here, strange things, but we've had a strange thing going on. Now, I did a show with Carrie O'Connor a little while back and got her to, you know, psychically do her, you know, mediumship thing with it and see what she could derive from what was going on, but I'm curious if you've heard of anything of this sort of phenomenon. Somebody gave me a piano on September 5th, and I thought, hey, free piano, cool, dropped it off here. I've been, like, playing up a storm. I mean, reading music. I mean, I've never had a piano or taken piano lessons and didn't know how to play. Didn't think I knew how to play a piano. Apparently, I was wrong. And then as I've been kind of exploring this odd phenomenon, I'm reading about, you know, grade five, grade six piano level books, like music, like two clefs, both hands, and all kind of shocking and surprising and very enjoyable. And just curious if you've had anyone, you know, or any kind of experience with that kind of phenomenon that is sort of unexplainable.
Well, I have read and heard of very similar things. Matter of fact, with the piano, where people have knowledge sometimes of languages, sometimes of instruments. Obviously, they have something stored in their consciousness, in their larger conscious self, that they didn't actually get through this particular lifetime experience, and they're able to access that at an intuitive level. And the people who can do this are people who are very intuitive, who don't have to do everything through their intellect. So as you sit at that keyboard and you kind of get the inclination to just move your hands like this, most of us, when we get those kind of inclinations, we just kind of shake our head or shake our hands and say, no, that won't make any sense here. Let me, you know, use my intellect to look at each note and see where it is on the keys and that sort of thing. But a few of us who are more intuitive tend to just follow those intuitions, and if you get the feeling to stretch out and do something, you just stretch out there and do it. And when you're in that sort of detached from the intellect state, it's amazing all the kinds of information that you can connect with. So a lot of it has to do with you, Nicole, and the kind of person you are, and the way you were able to translate that intuitive information into motions of your fingers.
And that's exactly how I stumbled on it, was when I was sort of mindless for a moment alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of absolutely in the throes of mid-playing, and then I literally went, oh, hang on, I don't know how to play. So my brain kind of tried to come back in there. So it's been a whole exercise in moving the intellect aside and
exactly.
Being able to...
That's the connection. You have to get that intellect out of the way, because it'll want to produce some kind of linear process, and that's really not the way people work. That's kind of the way we work in this physical matter reality, this virtual reality, because that's the nature of this reality. But you have more at your command than just what's, you know, captured in your brain in this reality, but you can't get to it intellectually. You have to get to it intuitively, let's put it that way. And that's an error that many people make when they go into trying to experience the non-physical, trying to participate in some of these strange or paranormal experiences. They go in with their intellect, and they think if they learn a technique or if they read the right books or practice the right things, that these things will happen. But if they approach it that way with their intellect, then they're frustrated because those things don't really happen. They happen when you plug in beyond your intellect. You plug in intuitively. That's when the things begin to happen.
Mm-hmm. And what an amazing experience that is, to have those moments and then to to watch the whole process come in, you know, like the brain kind of goes, hang on, everything, stop this for a minute here. I haven't, you know, discussed this with anyone, and I don't know this. And then, your other side kind of plugs back in and lets it flow, and you can't try not to think, because then you're thinking about not thinking and thinking.
Right.
So it's this whole, you know, dance. It's amazing. And
yes,
this,
and we...
Sorry, go ahead.
We get calibrated in this reality frame that the intellect has to lead and the rest of us follows. And because we are so, that's part of our culture, and it's very difficult just to be without, you know, if you tell somebody, well, just be, and they say, well, what do I do to be? You know, it's not that you do anything, you just be. And that's a hard point to get across, because people want to be through their intellect, and that's different.
Yeah, the first question that comes up was, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
So we want a how-to manual on something that there's no process to. It's this is the frustrating thing for me, too, in doing these shows and talking about these things, is it's all still the mind, you know? Pontificating and articulating and blah, blah, blah. And that this is where the whole desire for wanting to create something where we can enable every listener to have a direct experience with something beyond the mind. So they can come from knowing, not just hearing us talk about our stuff and or whatever, right? So that this is the whole point of the conversation that we had last time and today. So... I mean, you know, we started kind of at the top with meditation and, I guess, altering your state of mind, essentially. Is that that's the beginning place?
That's the beginning place. And the reason that's the beginning place is that most of us have heads full of chatter. You know, we're constantly thinking. That intellect not only is in charge, but it's incessant. It won't sit down and be quiet. It's constantly worrying over what's going to happen next, you know, what didn't happen that should have, what might happen that you want or you don't want. And that chatter going on in your head prevents you from being intuitive. It prevents you from tapping into these paranormal experiences. So the first thing on most people's path is to learn to meditate, because basically that means sit down, be still, and stop thinking. And the way that often that's done is that you sit down in a quiet place, you close your eyes, which shuts out a lot of the data coming in, and then you just fill your head full of nonsense, and that nonsense is called a mantra. Well, the mantra is not really a magical word that has, you know, nifty power of its own. What it is a sound that if you fill your head with this nonsense sound, then you're not thinking about other things. So it's like filling your mind with cotton candy, you know. It just sits there and fills up all the space and chases the thoughts away. That gives you an opportunity to actually get to know your consciousness without your intellect chattering all the time. And, you know, if you want to travel and do things with consciousness, well, the first thing you have to do is get acquainted with it. And the way to do that is with meditation.
Now, I know that when I took all the training with former CIA remote viewer Dr. David Morehouse doing the remote viewing stuff, it all involved getting into delta and theta, you know, the deeper brainwave states to access the information that was beyond the conscious mind. When you were setting up these experiments, like for the Monroe Institute and stuff, is that a similar process then?
Absolutely, and the reason that is that your intellect, the state we're in now and your listeners are in now probably as they're listening to all of this, is a beta state. That's a higher frequency, and that's where the mind is working, the intellect is in charge, and so on. That's what happens in beta. That's wide awake, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed in beta. Underneath that is alpha state, and alpha state is just kind of chilled out, relaxed. Your mind, your brain, your intellect is still in charge, but it's not so frantic. It's kind of laid back and relaxing. Then you get down to a theta state. In the theta state, you're underneath that intellect. In the delta state, which is below theta, you're unconscious. Delta is the hard asleep. The kind that when somebody's in delta, they're hard to wake up. They're just really gone. The theta is that in-between state. You're not gone. You're still there, but your intellect is kind of elsewhere. You're not really paying attention. Like just before you started playing that piano, you probably were in a theta state. And we found, working at Monroe's lab, that in order to train people to do out-of-body or to encourage them to do that sort of thing or travel or do remote viewing, we played these binaural beats which kind of forced their brain into a theta state, which is around 4 hertz.
And you can get devices that do that in trainment as
yes.
well, is that right?
Yes, you can buy a box and you can tell it what frequency binaural beat you want. A binaural beat is just a sound generator that puts one tone in one ear and then a tone, let's say if you want a 4 hertz binaural beat, hertz just means beats per second. If you want a 4 hertz binaural beat, you put another tone in the other ear that's just 4 hertz different, a little different frequency by 4 cycles per second. Inside your brain at the corpus callosum, which is the interface between the two hemispheres of the brain, those sounds actually, those neurons in there that are each dancing to each audio frequency, they actually get together and produce the beat frequency that you can hear. And it entrains the brain waves to a theta state. So that's the whole point. Yes, you can buy those and dial up a 4 hertz binaural beat on any number of devices commercially available.
Okay, so step one basically is getting the intellect out of the way in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
Does that apply with all of the experiments that we were going to talk about doing today?
It does, and a matter of fact, you know, I had listed some things that I called attitude, you know, that you have to have. And if you look at these attitudes, and I'll just go through those, all they are is ways of getting the intellect to sit down and be quiet and letting your intuition kind of be you, let you be your intuitive self, not your intellectual self. Because there are certain things that get in the way that grab hold of that intellect and keep that intellect going. You know, the first one I had on my list was fear. If you have fear, then that fear is attached to your intellect. So as much as something frightens you, if you're afraid of going out of body, if you're afraid of running into bad things or doing something that is not normal, if those kinds of things frighten you, then that fear attaches to your intellect and will keep you from doing those things. If you have expectations, if you say, I know, I'm going to do this, and, you know, I'm going to travel somewhere, and this is what's going to happen, and I'm, you know, you have all these expectations about what it's going to feel like, what it's going to do, I'm going to look and see my silver cord, then I'm going to do this, I'm going to go through the wall. You have all these expectations that they all attach themselves to your intellect. So after have no fear, the next is have no expectations, no preconceived notions about what will happen, about what won't happen. The next thing is, don't judge what it is that you have just done. Once you've had an experience, just accept it the way it is. Don't be too quick to judge it. Now, eventually you need to judge it in order to determine whether it's just in your head or, you know, are you imagining this, or is it something that you're really experiencing outside of yourself. That will take some time. But if you try to judge it too soon, you'll just drag your intellect into it and you'll blow it all away and you'll never have the experience. So first, you just experience. You're detached. It's an adventure. It's experience to have. Whatever happens, happens, and you just accept it that way. No expectations, no fear. And you do that for, I'd say, months. Do that for at least 3 months, to where you have, you know, dozens and dozens of experiences before you should ever start examining them and analyzing them and seeing how you can prove that they are outside of yourself and that they're real experiences. Eventually you do need to prove it. I'm not saying do these things without proof. You do need to prove it eventually, but if you try to prove it too soon, you'll be part of the problem. So those are some things that just attach your experience to your intellect, which keeps you from experiencing what it is you're trying to experience.
Ironic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So it's
okay.
Like the harder you push on these things, the less likely you are to experience them. The more you want it, the more you try. It's one of these things that you try, try, and try. You're very likely, the trying is what's getting in the way, because that trying has something to do with expectations and needs and all that sort of stuff, which keeps, you know, what you're trying to have happen from happening. When you let go when you just kind of accept it, you're no longer pushing for it, then you're much more likely to be a success in your efforts.
Interesting. Well, yeah, and it's interesting as in the early part of doing any kind of exploration like this, what comes up for you in the whole process around that. I know with like psi experiments online and stuff, when I started doing well, it freaked me out, and I would close down the flow or whatever. You know, it was just there's a real adjustment period in there, I think, to seeing results and not getting freaked out by that.
Exactly.
Or putting, you know, other meanings on it. So
it takes a lot of practice and resolve. I can remember when I was first learning to do out-of-body at Monroe, and he was teaching me the process that whenever I would get into a vibration state where my whole body feels like it's plastic and fluid and just oscillating, I was so excited about that because I was expecting that. It's like I knew that was one of the states that, you know, I wanted to get to. And then it's like, oh, my God, there's the vibration state, you know, and it's gone. Because as soon as you get excited about it, then your intellect's tied to it, and you're no longer in a position where you can connect to it. So you have to get to the point as, oh, yeah, the vibration state, that's nice. Let's just go with it and see how it feels. So that's the thing. People who are trying too hard get real excited when they first experience one of these things, and then that excitement kind of ruins the experience.
Interesting. Now, where should we start as far as what experiments we can discuss here today?
Okay, well, I have several that are easy to do. They're easy to be successful with. Just follow those rules we've already talked about. You know, have no fear. Get rid of your intellect. You know, be dispassionate. No analysis. No thinking about it. Expect nothing. Don't judge and compare. Let each one, you know, that's another thing. Some people will meditate and they'll have an experience. Then they'll meditate the next day and it'll be a different experience. And they'll think, oh, you know, was I doing it right before or am I doing it right now? And then if they like one of those experiences, they'll say, well, this is the way it should be, not that way. And pretty soon that analysis and that intellect has ruined the whole thing. Every experience is different. Don't expect to repeat. Don't expect all of them to be the same. It's just an experience. Accept it. Go with it. Go wherever it leads you and be satisfied with that. Don't be so pushy. Don't try to force it. Again, it's not to do these things. It's not something you have to learn to do. What you have to learn is to get out of the way and let it happen. All of this is natural stuff. It's not secret process that will, some kind of secret ritual that will bolt you into the out-of-body state or into a paranormal state or make you play the piano when you don't really know how. It's a matter of you know these things. You have this ability. Out-of-body state's a perfectly natural state. It's like going to sleep or, you know, walking around awake. It's a natural state to a human being. You just have to learn to get out of the way and let it happen and access it. That's, you know, so it's not technique. Or if it's technique, it's the technique of not doing, not the technique of doing. Well, having said that, then there's some things that are easy to do. One of these things that's very easy to do is diagnosing illnesses. Now, the way you should do this, you should pick somebody that you don't know. So that means you ask somebody that you work with or a friend of yours if they know somebody who has an illness. Now, this shouldn't be like a runny nose. This should be, you know, something major, something that will show up. Ask them that. You don't need to know their name. Particularly if you know them, you don't need to know your name because you want to keep your intellect out of it. If they gave you a name that you recognized, now you'd be analyzing everything. Oh, let's see, when I saw them last, let's see, were they limping, did this, you know, what do they do, what did the people who we know in common, you know, so you have all this intellectual stuff. So it needs to be something you can't get your intellect around, which means somebody you don't know. And if it's their Aunt Susie, they can tell you it's my Aunt Susie as long as you don't know their Aunt Susie. That would be fine. And that person, though, knows what's wrong with them, and they don't tell you. And you just look. And the way you do that is while you're meditating, you think of this person. Say, whoever this person is, my friend Harry. You know, my friend Harry gave me a name, suggested that they know somebody that's ill, and this somebody is his cousin Susie. Okay, then I know that. So I say, well, let's go to my friend Harry's cousin Susie and just take a look at her. Now, what I visualize then in my mind while I'm meditating is something, a kind of a humanoid shape that looks like maybe a gingerbread cookie. You know, we don't have to get, you know, very detailed pictures. These things are just tools. The pictures we see and all are just tools. They're not so important that we have to get a lot of detail. So here's our kind of outline. It's kind of lump at the top, and that's the head, and then kind of a body and maybe some arms on it and maybe some lines for legs. It's a very symbolic human being. We look at that white gingerbread man, and we, in our intent, say, I want to see everything that is unhealthy as dark. The more unhealthy it is, the darker I want to see it. So if it's just a little unhealthy, something systemic, maybe I'll see it as gray. If it's a big cancerous tumor, I'll see it as black as coal. And then you just scan that body. Look at that gingerbread cookie that you have intended is your friend's Aunt Susie. You've intended that things that are unhealthy are dark and things that are healthy are light. And you scan it, and then you'll see a dark spot. And you'll see that dark spot is right on the, you know, right side, about midway up in the abdomen, that kind of thing. And that's basically all you need to do. You go back to your friend and say, well, is your Aunt Susie suffering something right about here, you know, midway up on the abdomen on the right side? And they can tell you yes or no. So that's real simple. Now, we've not gotten into just what it is. You know, maybe it's an ulcer, you know, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a tumor. It could be anything, but we're not worried about that yet. First, just get the idea that where it is, that there's something there, and where it is. If you have expectations, if you're thinking, now what would Aunt Susie have? Let's see, about how old is she? And, you know, you get your intellect into it, you're going to ruin it. If you are worried that you're not going to get it right, and you feel pressure, you're not going to do it. Just have to relax and let it happen. Accept that it could be right, it could be wrong. Doesn't matter. You're just doing it. It's an experience. Take that kind of a lighthearted approach to it, and you will find that some of the time you're right. And then you think, well, how was I when I was right? How did that feel? What sort of state was I in? How was I feeling about it? How detached was I? And pretty soon you'll be right most of the time. Now, this experiment might take you 2 or 3 months worth of doing this, and you have to do it 50 different times. But after 50 different times, I'll bet that if you do these things I've said, you'll be at a 75% correct in what you see, maybe 80% correct. And if you do it for a year, you might be 95% correct.
Uh-oh. Are you still there, Tom? Oh, no. Don't tell me Tom went interdimensional on me again. Or I went.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, boy. That is so strange. Can anybody hear me? Okay. Stand by. Hello?
How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com spoonbending kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Tom, I think it's ironic that we're having phenomenon going on with the phone lines as we're talking about experimentation with phenomenon. Now, I'm curious, actually, if you've had that kind of experience when you're doing this work, problems with electronics and strange, inexplicable things going on?
Sometimes, yes. That just seems to happen. I don't know. You know, when some years ago I used to have a thing with watches. I'd look at a watch and it would have an odd time on it, and I'd look away and I'd look back, and it'd be 2 or 3 hours different. The watch would jump around very strangely. And of course, this was a digital watch, you know, driven by an oscillating crystal. You know, they don't jump around; that just doesn't happen. Yeah, strange things do happen with electronic devices sometimes.
Yeah, I had to stop wearing watches years ago. My last straw was when it started going backwards. I was like, okay, I'm done. but time is
illusory. Where were we?
Where were we? Indeed. We were talking about the doing the altered state healing exercise. And
well,
I was
it wasn't
about
healing. It was just diagnosing.
Diagnosing.
Yeah, healing will be kind of step two, but just diagnosing is a good thing to do. That's easier, actually, than healing.
Mm-hmm. One would think, anyway. And it was interesting because a lot of the things you were saying, I can totally relate to the remote viewing techniques, you know, the science that I learned through David Morehouse, because, the being unattached to the outcome, all the exercises and getting your intellect out of the way and getting into the altered state and being really there's no analysis in the collection and being sort of like an empty cup and just show me what's there and no judgment at all and, you know,
Nicole, it's all the same thing. Whether you're doing in and out of body, whether you're doing remote viewing, whether you're healing, whether you are, you know, visiting various reality systems, consciousness is consciousness. Consciousness all works the same way, and though there's lots of applications you can do with consciousness, it's the same thing. So all the rules, all the approaches, you know, they may seem real different until you actually get to know them, and then you realize it's just different versions of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also the factor of the last thing you'd want to know is where you're going. That's why you have the sort of address that suggests nothing. So, interesting. So anybody can do this, and is there anything
else? I would say that if most people do these exercises, that I hope they've heard most of it before I took leave here, that I suspect that they will be right away about 70% correct.
I mean, that's phenomenal.
And what they should do is try to note how it is they feel and what it is they're doing on the times that they're correct versus the times that they're not. And then, with some experience, I would think most people in, 3 or 4 or 5, 6 months ought to be able to get to the point that they're about 80% correct in their diagnosing. It's just not that hard to do.
And practice does help.
Oh, practice is important. If you just do it once and expect, that you've got it, then, that's not the way it works. You have to iterate and iterate. You keep doing it, and as you do it, you'll get a feeling what you did and how you felt, how you were when it was working well and how you were when it wasn't. And that will help, that feedback will then help you get into the right state and attitude for making it work most of the time.
Okay.
So these are not things that are only to the chosen few. These are things, everybody's conscious, and everybody has the ability to use their consciousness fully. It's just a matter of practicing and not getting in the way.
So that's the healing diagnosis experiment. Is there something that they can do that is, that's got quantifiable factors too, where you can say, is that what she has or he has?
Oh, absolutely. As soon as you do it, you go back to that person and say, I saw something, right about here on the body and so on, and, what does she have? And then that person tells you. That's the thing that works so well with this experiment, is that you get immediate feedback. So after every time you do it, you go get your feedback and see whether you're right or wrong. And that feedback, like I say, will help you hone in on a more productive altered state.
And certainly if you get positive feedback or accurate feedback, there's no way that you could have known that.
Right. This is somebody that you don't know, somebody you've never met probably. You have no idea. And that's important because that way it helps get your intellect out of the way by not knowing who they are. And not having any idea. You don't need to know whether they're, 50 years old or 5 years old. You just need to know a name, let's say, or something that in your mind lets you pick the right person. And that's all you should know about them. Get your feedback immediately and go do the next one. It will take you about, I'd say, 20 to 50 times that you do this before you start feeling that you know what you're doing and that you're getting them right most of the time.
Now, what about this food tasting experiment you mentioned?
Well, this is a way to in the old Star Trek, they used to have the Vulcan mind meld, right, where Spock mm-hmm. would put out his fingers and touch the other guy's fingers, and then he would know what was in that other person's mind. Well, you can do that. Consciousness communicates all the time, and you can kind of drop in on another person's consciousness very easily. And one of the ways that you can do that is you walk up behind somebody, probably a stranger, or it could be somebody else, but if you walk up behind them and they're sitting at a table or sitting at a counter and they're eating, try to taste what it is they're eating. See if you can't get the taste that they are experiencing at that time. So what you're trying to do is share their experience. And again, you have to have no expectations. You just, use your intuition, and you can check it out immediately because you can walk right up and kind of look over their shoulder or see what it is. And unless it's something you don't recognize, you probably know whether or not you were right or wrong. I offer these little experiments because they're simple things to do. You can do it almost any time when you're out shopping. You can, when you're in that place where they have a little lunch counter, you can do this sort of thing. And it's something that you can get the feedback on immediately. You can find out whether you're right or wrong. And again, that helps you hone in on those profitable states that will make you right more often. So it's just an easy thing to do where you actually taste that dill pickle. You taste those things and then go see if that's the case.
Now, is that something that you practice yourself still?
No, I don't actually practice. It's something I can do when I ever want to, but, that jumped out at me once when I happened to be out someplace, and I was standing in line at a lunch counter, and suddenly I got this strangest, strong taste in my mouth. And it was like, where is that coming from? And I had been working at Monroe's for probably a year or two, so I was kind of living in a altered state most of the time anyway. And then by the time I got up a little closer, I realized what it was, that what I was tasting was what this guy in front of me was eating. And it just kind of happened. And then I started doing it on purpose. And it got to where it was a little game that I would play, and it was just kind of fun to do. But it's not something you go around doing. I mean, I haven't done that for a long time. But it's just a way you learn then to tune in to other people. What are they feeling? What is their experience? And then you can use the same skills to be helpful to people, to be intuitive about people, so you know when they're hurting, when there's a problem, and what the problem is, because you can tune into them. You're very sensitive to their experiences. That's a good skill to use. I suppose you could develop that skill and then use it to eavesdrop on people and, you know, do things that weren't good, but hopefully if that's your motivation, you really won't learn much anyway, because your ego will get in the way and you'll never get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, is there something else that we can do maybe in, because that one's more of a sitting awake state, obviously, hopefully, if you're out in public. And
not all of them. A lot of these are that way. Some of them you're in a meditation state, like the diagnosing, but eventually you will be able to find that same state that's just as productive whether you're meditating or not. You can do it while you're walking around. Matter of fact, eventually you can get to the point where you can be in that intuitive meditation state while somebody's talking to you or while you're talking to them. It doesn't have to be sit down in a quiet room with your, you know, with your eyes closed to do that. That's just the way we learn it initially, because it's easier to learn that way. The point is that eventually you learn to just do that, to be that person. In other words, you live in that state all the time, or you can go there in seconds whenever you want to. That's kind of where you'd like to end up. So you don't have to go sit down in a quiet place and meditate to do these. You can pop into that theta state or be split. You can kind of, it's like parallel processing. There can be part of you in the alpha state holding a conversation and part of you that's in the theta state connecting to that person that you're talking to on an entirely different level, or traveling or remote viewing or healing or doing other kinds of things. It's just something you learn with practice.
Well, this one, I liked this one as a suggestion. Visit a dead relative and have a conversation.
Yes, visit a dead relative and have a conversation. This one is a little hard to get the proof afterwards. But the kind of proof you can get on this is if the conversation is something that wouldn't be in your mind. In other words, you talk about things or you get insight into a person that you really didn't know before. Once you start getting new information that was not in your mind or in your brain, they tell you things, they tell you about relationships, they tell you about things that happened between them and other people, and then you go check that out. That kind of thing is where your proof comes from. But it's easy to do because we have connections with our relatives. So you take a relative, particularly a favorite relative, and you basically go into your meditation state. You have an intention. Now, intention is what leads consciousness. The motivator, or the kind of the prime mover, the thing that moves consciousness, is intent. So you get into this meditation state. You have an intention to go see Uncle Harry, okay? And he's deceased. And you think of Uncle Harry. You have an intent to go see him. And then you just open yourself up. No expectations. Don't try to bring up a imitation Uncle Harry. Just open up, say, I'd like to talk to Uncle Harry, and then just open yourself and wait. See what happens. If you have no expectations or fear, you very likely will get some sort of a response. And when you do, interact with it. In the beginning, it's important to interact on a very basic level. Ask the kind of questions and interact in a way that gets like simple yes-no answers. Don't get into real, you know, language intense things until you're intuition is able to handle that kind of bandwidth. In the beginning, just small steps in communication, which the most basic step is kind of the yes-no step, will work. So you have that. Now, if you're not judgmental, you don't say, I wonder if that was really Uncle Harry, or was I just imagining that. If you get into that intellectual thing, it's all going to go away, and it'll just be inside your head. You need to do this enough to experience it to where you get some real information. You get stuff that otherwise you wouldn't know. You work up a relationship. Don't worry if it's just in my mind. Say, well, maybe I'm just imagining that. Well, don't worry about that for now. Later, you need to be judgmental. You need to look for that evidence. But in the beginning, if you look too soon for that evidence, you'll blow away your ability to connect to it. Because in the beginning, it's very, very subtle, and you'll miss it if you get analytical about whether you're imagining it or not. Just experience it. Just do it. And after you've done it a dozen times, after you've done it enough that you feel like you've really got a relationship going with this guy, you'll see that pretty soon the information will get deeper and deeper, and before long you'll have some information you can go check, and you will get your evidence. Don't force that evidence too soon. That's a big mistake that people make. They either get the 100% or zero. Better to start and get the 5%, the 10%. Work yourself up until you get the 100%. Don't say, I either get 100% or it wasn't real. Hmm. That's a mistake.
So these sessions, do you do them in a certain time of day, certain kind of state, or any kind of state?
Well, for the beginner, I would say you do this best while you're meditating. Go into your meditation state, do the things you do while you're meditating, and then at the end, just before you're done and ready to come back, go visit Uncle Harry. Go see your friend's Aunt Susie and see what's wrong with her. Do these things. You don't have to spend a lot of time at it. If it takes a lot of time, then most people won't do it or they won't keep up with it. So we have to have things that are short and easy. Otherwise, the people's attention span isn't long enough these days to put a whole lot of effort into it if it isn't simple and easy. So these are simple, easy things to do when you meditate would be best. Eventually, you'll be able to go talk with your dead uncle, while you're driving your car. But don't start that way. It's better to start from the meditation state. That's a quiet place where you can put your mind out of the chatter. If your mind's chattering while you're doing this, it won't work. So you have to get that clear mental space. The best place to do it from is when you are a point consciousness in the void. As far as you, all you're aware of is that you are a point of consciousness in a void. You don't have any sense of being in a room, of having a body, nothing. You're just consciousness in the void. Once you get to that point, that means all the chatter's gone and you are nothing but consciousness. Then you just exercise your intent, tell your consciousness what you want it to do, and it'll go do it.
Once something shows up, how do you know something or someone has joined you?
Well, if you want to talk to Uncle Harry, then you'll have the sense of Uncle Harry being there. He probably will talk to you, and you can say, is that you, Uncle Harry? And you'll get a yeah. And you can say, well, how will I know? Or, how's it like? How you doing? And you just have this conversation. Again, simple conversations. But you just interact. It's your intuition. Don't expect a voice that's clear, linear English to go through your head. It'll be more like a feeling. It'll be an intuitive kind of thing. That's the way it is at first. Eventually, after you work with it enough, it'll be more like you're just talking to Uncle Harry. But it starts subtle. So you don't want to chase it away by being analytical with that intellect too soon. So that's how you know. You get feedback. Now, if you go out there and want to talk to Uncle Harry and nothing happens, then the thing that I would do would be to try to change your approach. Maybe you still have too much chatter going on. Maybe you need to get a little more relaxed. Maybe you need to do it a different time in your meditation. Perhaps you need to look and see whether or not you have expectations or that you are, it has to be a certain way. You expect to hear his voice, and if you hear some other voice that doesn't sound like him, well, then that's a problem. Just be open to whatever happens. Now, it's possible that some other entity will start talking to you and pretend to be your Uncle Harry. That happens too. Well, that's okay. Just experience. Get the conversation. Work the relationship up, and eventually you will know what's going on and who it is, and you'll be able to make those kinds of discriminations. In the very beginning, don't even try to discriminate. You have to live with a lot of uncertainty in the beginning. You're not sure what you're doing. You're not even sure if you're doing anything. But just keep doing it anyway. Eventually, that surety will come with experience. Requiring that surety from the get-go is a sure way not to get anywhere at all.
So kind of going full circle to where you began of not having fear and judgment over it then.
Exactly. It's the no fear, the no expectations. You know, just be open to the experience. Let your mind be clear. Make sure your intent is clear. Because if your intent is jumping all over, if your intent says, well, I'd like to talk to Uncle Harry. Oh, I'd like to know what so-and-so is going to do tomorrow. If your intent is flying all around, then you're not going to get anything. Your consciousness is jumping around, basically chasing its tail and isn't going to go anywhere. If you can keep that intent very firm and directed, then you're just open, then things will begin to happen. They may not happen the first time or even the first 10 times, but you just keep after it.
Well, we have enough for a good start here. I want to try these things and encourage the other listeners who are ready to slap a no-fear bumper sticker on their forehead to try it as well. And then get back to me. Let me know what happens. experiments@newsforthesoul.com. Let's go with that. We want your mail, and we want Tom Campbell back on the show again, so let's stay in touch and get you back on soon and talk about this some more. Thank you, Tom, for being on the show today.
Oh, our time is up already.
I know.
Getting started.
I know. I was just warming up.
Yes,
but we'll get you back on again real soon. In the median, what now? It's my-big-toe.com, right?
That's right. And actually, if you don't put the hyphens in, it's just mybigtoe.com. That'll work.
That'll work.
I had to pay somebody to lease that because they had the name before me. Mine, the name that I own is with the hyphens, so that's why I always say it that way. But without the hyphens will work.
Okay,
it's just easy to remember.
And that's the name of the trilogy, My Big Toe, by Tom Campbell. And highly encourage you to check that out. Some interesting bedtime reading there. And we'll get Tom back on the show real soon. If you missed any of the show, go to newsforthesoul.com. And remember, I want to hear how it goes. Where have you challenged your reality today? Let me know. And thanks for tuning in. We'll be back on... What day are we back? Friday, I think. Newsforthesoul.com. That's where you go to find out. That's where I'll go to find out, too. Thanks again, everybody, and thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.